I do find that a peaceful atmosphere can help with a little problem of memory. Don't you? Though Clary had told herself she remembered the way she'd come with Luke the night before, this turned out not to be entirely true. Heading toward the city center seemed like the best bet for getting directions. But once she found the stone courtyard with the disused well, she couldn't remember whether to turn left or right from it. She turned left, which plunged her into a warren of twisting streets, each one much like the next, and each turn getting her more hopelessly lost than before. Finally, she emerged into a wider street lined with shops. Pedestrians hurried by on either side, none of them giving her a second glance. A few of them were also dressed in fighting gear, although most weren't. It was cool out, and long old-fashioned coats were the order of the day. The wind was brisk, and with a pang, Clary thought of her green velvet coat hanging up in Amatis's spare bedroom. Luke hadn't been lying when he'd said that shadow hunters had come from all over the world for the summit. Clary passed an Indian woman in a gorgeous gold sari, a pair of curved blades hanging from a chain around her waist. A tall, dark-skinned man with an angular Aztec face was gazing into a shop window full of weaponry, bracelets made of the same hard-shining material as the demon towers laddered his wrists. Farther down the street, a man in a white nomadic robe consulted what looked like a street map. The sight of him gave Clary the nerve to approach a passing woman in a heavy brocade coat and ask her the way to Princewater Street. If there was ever going to be a time when the city's inhabitants wouldn't necessarily be suspicious of someone who didn't seem to know where they were going, this would be it. Her instinct was right. Without a trace of hesitation, the woman gave her a hurried series of directions. And then right at the end of Old Castle Canal and over the stone bridge, and that's where you'll find Princewater. She gave Clary a smile. Visiting anyone in particular? The Penhallows? Oh, that's the blue house, gold trim, backs up onto the canal. It's a big place. You can't miss it. She was half right. It was a big place. But Clary walked right by it before realizing her mistake and swerving back around to look at it again. It was really more indigo than blue, she thought. But then again, not everyone noticed colors that way. Most people couldn't tell the difference between lemon yellow and saffron, as if they were even close to each other. And the trim on the house wasn't gold, it was bronze. A nice darkish bronze, as if the house had been there for many years, and it probably had. Everything in this place was so ancient. Enough, Clary told herself. She always did this when she was nervous, let her mind wander off in all sorts of random directions. She rubbed her hands down the sides of her trousers. Her palms were sweaty and damp. The material felt rough and dry against her skin like snake scales. She mounted the steps and took hold of the heavy door knocker. It was shaped like a pair of angel's wings, and when she let it fall, she could hear the sound echoing like the tolling of a huge bell. A moment later, the door was yanked open, and Isabel Lightwood stood on the threshold, her eyes wide with shock. Clary? Clary smiled weakly. Hi, Isabel. Isabel leaned against the door jamb, her expression dismal. Oh, crap. Back in the cell, Simon collapsed on the bed, listening to the footsteps of the guards recede as they marched away from his door. Another night. Another night down here in prison while the Inquisitor waited for him to remember. You do see how it looks. In all his worst fears, his worst nightmares, it had never occurred to Simon that anyone might think he was in league with Valentine. Valentine hated downworlders, famously. Valentine had stabbed him and drained his blood and left him to die, although, admittedly, the Inquisitor didn't know that. There was a rustle from the other side of the cell wall. "I have to admit, I wondered if you'd be coming back," said the hoarse voice Simon remembered from the night before. "I take it you didn't give the Inquisitor what he wants." "I don't think so," Simon said, approaching the wall. He ran his fingers over the stone as if looking for a crack in it, something he could see through, but there was nothing. "Who are you?" "He's a stubborn man, Aldertree," said the voice, as if Simon hadn't spoken. "He'll keep trying." Simon leaned against the damp wall. "Then I guess I'll be down here for a while." "I don't suppose you'd be willing to tell me what it is he wants from you."
"Why do you want to know?"
The chuckle that answered Simon sounded like metal scraping against stone.
"I've been in this cell longer than you have, Daylighter, and as you can see, there's not a lot to keep the mind occupied. Any distraction helps."
Simon laced his hands over his stomach. The deer blood had taken the edge off his hunger, but it hadn't been quite enough. His body still ached with thirst.
"You keep calling me that," he said. "Daylighter."
"I heard the guards talking about you. A vampire who can walk around in the sunlight. No one's ever seen anything like it before."
"And yet you have a word for it. Convenient."
"It's a downworlder word, not a clave one. They have legends about creatures like you. I'm surprised you don't know that."
"I haven't exactly been a downworlder for very long," Simon said. "And you seem to know a lot about me."
"The guards like to gossip," said the voice. "And the Lightwoods appearing through the portal with a bleeding, dying vampire? That's a good piece of gossip. Though I have to say I wasn't expecting you to show up here. Not until they started fixing up the cell for you. I'm surprised the Lightwoods stood for it."
"Why wouldn't they?" Simon said bitterly. "I'm nothing. I'm a downworlder."
"Maybe to the Consul," said the voice. "But the Lightwoods?"
"What about them?"
There was a short pause.
"Those shadow hunters who live outside Idris, especially those who run institutes, tend to be more tolerant. The local clave, on the other hand, is a good deal more hidebound."
"And what about you?" Simon said. "Are you a downworlder?"
"A downworlder?"
Simon couldn't be sure, but there was an edge of anger in the stranger's voice, as if he resented the question.
"My name is Samuel. Samuel Blackburn. I am Nephilim. Years ago, I was in the circle with Valentine. I slaughtered downworlders at the uprising. I'm not one of them."
"Oh."
Simon swallowed. His mouth tasted of salt. The members of Valentine's circle had been caught and punished by the clave, he remembered. Except for those like the Lightwoods who'd managed to make deals or accept exile in exchange for forgiveness.
"Have you been down here ever since?"
"No. After the uprising, I slipped out of Idris before I could be caught. I stayed away for years. Years. Until, like a fool, thinking I'd been forgotten, I came back. Of course, they caught me the moment I returned. The clave has its way of tracking its enemies. They dragged me in front of the Inquisitor, and I was interrogated for days. When they were done, they tossed me in here."
Samuel sighed.
"In French, this sort of prison is called an oubliette. It means a forgetting place. It's where you toss the garbage you don't want to remember, so it can rot away without bothering you with its stench."
"Fine. I'm a downworlder, so I'm garbage. But you're not. You're Nephilim."
"I'm Nephilim, who was in league with Valentine. That makes me no better than you. Worse, even. I'm a turncoat."
"But there are plenty of other shadow hunters who used to be circle members. The Lightwoods and the Panhollows."
"They all recanted. Turned their backs on Valentine. I didn't."
"You didn't? But why not?"
"Because I'm more afraid of Valentine than I am of the clave," said Samuel. "And if you were sensible, Daylighter, you would be too."
"But you're supposed to be in New York," Isabel exclaimed. "Jace said you'd changed your mind about coming. He said you wanted to stay with your mother."
"Jace lied," Clary said flatly. "He didn't want me here, so he lied to me about when you were leaving, and then lied to you about me changing my mind. Remember when you told me he never lies? That is so not true."
"He normally never does," said Isabel, who had gone pale. "Look, did you come here? I mean, does this have something to do with Simon?"
"With Simon? No.
Simon's safe in New York, thank God.
Although he's going to be really pissed that he never got to say goodbye to me."
Isabel's blank expression was starting to annoy Clary.
Come on, Isabel, let me in. I need to see Jace.
So, you just came here on your own? Did you have permission from the Clave?
Please tell me you had permission from the Clave.
Not as such.
You broke the law?
Isabel's voice rose and then dropped. She went on almost in a whisper.
If Jace finds out, he'll freak. Clary, you've got to go home.
No, I'm supposed to be here, Clary said, not even sure herself quite where her stubbornness was coming from.
And I need to talk to Jace.
Now isn't a good time.
Isabel looked around anxiously, as if hoping there was someone she could appeal to for help in removing Clary from the premises.
Please just go back to New York, please.
I thought you liked me, Izzy.
Clary went for the guilt. Isabel bit her lip. She was wearing a white dress and had her hair pinned up and looked younger than she usually did. Behind her, Clary could see a high-ceilinged entryway hung with antique-looking oil paintings.
I do like you. It's just that Jace... Oh my God, what are you wearing? Where did you get fighting gear?
Clary looked down at herself. It's a long story.
You can't come in here like that. If Jace sees you...
Oh, so what if he sees me?
Isabel, I came here because of my mother.
For my mother.
Jace may not want me here, but he can't make me stay home. I'm supposed to be here. My mother expected me to do this for her.
You'd do it for your mother, wouldn't you?
Of course I would, Isabel said. But Clary, Jace has his reasons.
Then I'd love to hear what they are. Clary ducked under Isabel's arm and into the entryway of the house.
Clary!
Isabel yelped and darted after her. But Clary was already halfway down the hall. She saw with the half of her mind that wasn't concentrating on dodging Isabel that the house was built like Amatis's, tall and thin, but considerably larger and more richly decorated. The hallway opened into a room with high windows that looked out over a wide canal. White boats plied the water, their sails drifting by like dandelion clocks tossed on the wind. A dark-haired boy sat on a couch by one of the windows, apparently reading a book.
Sebastian, Isabel called, don't let her go upstairs.
The boy looked up, startled, and a moment later was in front of Clary, blocking her path to the stairs. Clary skidded to a halt. She'd never seen anyone move that fast before except Jace. The boy wasn't even out of breath. In fact, he was smiling at her.
So this is the famous Clary.
His smile lit up his face, and Clary felt her breath catch. For years, she'd drawn her own ongoing graphic story, the tale of a king's son who was under a curse that meant that everyone he loved would die. She'd put everything she had into dreaming up her dark, romantic, shadowy prince, and here he was, standing in front of her. The same pale skin, the same tumbling hair, and eyes so dark, the pupils seemed to meld with the iris. The same high cheekbones and deep-set shadowed eyes fringed with long lashes. She knew she'd never set eyes on this boy before, and yet... The boy looked puzzled.
I don't think... Have we met before?
Speechless, Clary shook her head.
Sebastian!
Isabel's hair had come out of its pins and hung down over her shoulders, and she was glaring.
Don't be nice to her. She's not supposed to be here.
Clary, go home.
With an effort, Clary wrenched her gaze away from Sebastian and shot a glare at Isabel.
What, back to New York? And how am I supposed to get there?
How did you get here? Sebastian inquired. Sneaking into Alicante is quite an accomplishment.
I came through a portal, said Clary.
A portal? Isabel looked astonished.
But there isn't a portal left to New York. Valentine destroyed them both.
I don't owe you any explanations, Clary said. Not until you give me some. For one thing, where's Jace?
He's not here,
Isabel answered, at exactly the same time that Sebastian said. He's upstairs. Isabel turned on him.
Sebastian, shut up!
Sebastian looked perplexed. But she's his sister. Wouldn't he want to see her? Isabel opened her mouth and then closed it again. Clary could see that Isabel was weighing the advisability of explaining her complicated relationship with Jace to the completely oblivious Sebastian against the advisability of springing an unpleasant surprise on Jace.
Finally, she threw her hands up in a gesture of despair. "Fine, Clary," she said, with an unusual, for Isabel, amount of anger in her voice. "Go ahead and do whatever you want, regardless of who it hurts. You always do, anyway, don't you?"
Ouch.
Clary shot Isabel a reproachful look before turning back to Sebastian, who stepped silently out of her way. She darted past him and up the stairs, vaguely aware of voices below her as Isabel shouted at the unfortunate Sebastian. But that was Isabel. If there was a boy around and blame that needed to be pinned on someone, Isabel would pin it on him. The staircase widened into a landing with a bay-windowed alcove that looked out over the city. A boy was sitting in the alcove reading. He looked up as Clary came up the stairs and blinked in surprise.
"I know you."
"Hi, Max. It's Clary, Jace's sister, remember?" Max brightened.
"You showed me how to read Naruto," he said, holding out his book to her. "Look, I got another one. This one's called..."
"Max, I can't talk now. I promise I'll look at your book later. But do you know where Jace is?" Max's face fell.
"That room," he said, and pointed to the last door down the hall. "I wanted to go in there with him, but he told me he had to do grown-up stuff. Everyone's always telling me that."
"I'm sorry," Clary said, but her mind was no longer on the conversation. It was racing ahead. What would she say to Jace when she saw him? What would he say to her? Moving down the hall to the door, she thought, it would be better to be friendly, not angry. Yelling at him will just make him defensive. He has to understand that I belong here, just like he does. I don't need to be protected like a piece of delicate china. I'm strong, too. She threw the door open. The room seemed to be a sort of library, the walls lined with books. It was brightly lit, light streaming through a tall picture window. In the middle of the room stood Jace. He wasn't alone, though, not by a long shot. There was a dark-haired girl with him, a girl Clary had never seen before, and the two of them were locked together in a passionate embrace. Chapter 6 Bad Blood. Dizziness washed over Clary, as if all the air had been sucked out of the room. She tried to back away, but stumbled and hit the door with her shoulder. It shut with a bang, and Jason the girl broke apart. Clary froze. They were both staring at her. She noticed that the girl had dark, straight hair to her shoulders and was extremely pretty. The top buttons of her shirt were undone, showing a strip of lacy bra. Clary felt as if she were about to throw up. The girl's hands went to her blouse, quickly doing up the buttons. She didn't look pleased. "Excuse me," she said with a frown. "Who are you?" Clary didn't answer. She was looking at Jace, who was staring at her incredulously. His skin was drained of all color, showing the dark rings around his eyes. He looked at Clary as if he were staring down the barrel of a gun. "Aline," Jace's voice was without warmth or color. "This is my sister, Clary."
"Oh. Oh!"
Aline's face relaxed into a slightly embarrassed smile. "Sorry. What a way to meet you. Hi, I'm Aline." She advanced on Clary, still smiling, her hand out. "I don't think I can touch her," Clary thought with a sinking feeling of horror. She looked at Jace, who seemed to read the expression in her eyes. Unsmiling, he took Aline by the shoulders and said something in her ear. She looked surprised, shrugged, and headed for the door without another word. This left Clary alone with Jace, alone with someone who was still looking at her as if she were his worst nightmare come to life. "Jace," she said, and took a step toward him. He backed away from her as if she were coated in something poisonous. "What," he said, "in the name of the angel, Clary, are you doing here?" Despite everything, the harshness of his tone hurt. "You could at least pretend you were glad to see me, even a little bit."
"I'm not glad to see you," he said.
Some of his color had come back, but the shadows under his eyes were still gray smudges against his skin. Clary waited for him to say something else, but he seemed content just to stare at her in undisguised horror. She noticed with a distracted clarity that he was wearing a black sweater that hung off his wrists as if he'd lost weight, and that the nails on his hands were bitten down to the quick.
"Not even a little bit."
This isn't you, she said. I hate it when you act like this.
Oh, you hate it, do you? Well, I'd better stop doing it then, hadn't I? I mean, you do everything I ask you to do.
You had no right to do what you did, she snapped at him, suddenly furious. Lying to me like that? You had no right.
I had every right, he shouted.
She didn't think he'd ever shouted at her before.
I had every right, you stupid, stupid girl. I'm your brother, and I...
And you what? You own me?
You don't own me, whether you're my brother or not.
The door behind Clary flew open. It was Alec, soberly dressed in a long, dark blue jacket, his black hair in disarray. He wore muddy boots and an incredulous expression on his usually calm face.
What in all possible dimensions is going on here? He said, looking from Jace to Clary with amazement. Are you two trying to kill each other?
Not at all, said Jace.
As if by magic, Clary saw it had all been wiped away, his rage and his panic, and he was icy calm again.
Clary was just leaving.
Good, Alec said, because I need to talk to you, Jace.
Doesn't anyone in this house ever say, hi, nice to see you anymore? Clary demanded of no one in particular. It was much easier to guilt Alec than Isabel.
It is good to see you, Clary, he said. Except, of course, for the fact that you're really not supposed to be here. Isabel told me you got here on your own somehow, and I'm impressed.
Could you not encourage her? Jace inquired.
But I really, really need to talk to Jace about something. Can you give us a few minutes?
I need to talk to him, too, she said. About our mother.
I don't feel like talking, said Jace. To either of you, as a matter of fact.
Yes, you do, Alec said. You really want to talk to me about this.
I doubt that, Jace said.
He had turned his gaze back to Clary.
You didn't come here alone, did you? He said slowly, as if realizing that the situation was even worse than he'd thought. Who came with you?
There seemed to be no point in lying about it.
Luke, said Clary. Luke came with me.
Jace blanched.
But Luke is a downworlder. Do you know what the Clave does to unregistered downworlders who come into the Glass City? Who cross the wards without permission? Coming to Idris is one thing, but entering Alicante? Without telling anyone?
No, Clary said in a half-whisper. But I know what you're going to say.
That if you and Luke don't go back to New York immediately, you'll find out.
For a moment, Jace was silent, meeting her eyes with his own. The desperation in his expression shocked her. He was the one threatening her, after all, not the other way around.
Jace, Alec said into the silence, a tingle of panic creeping into his voice. Haven't you wondered where I've been all day?
That's a new coat you're wearing, Jace said without looking at his friend. I figure you went shopping. Though why you're so eager to bother me about it, I have no idea.
I didn't go shopping, Alec said furiously. I went...
The door opened again. In a flutter of white dress, Isabel darted in, shutting the door behind her. She looked at Clary and shook her head.
I told you he'd freak out, she said, didn't I?
Ah, I told you so, Jay said. Always a classy move.
Clary looked at him with horror.
How can you joke? She whispered. You just threatened Luke.
Luke, who likes you and trusts you. Because he's a downworlder. What's wrong with you? Isabel looked horrified.
Luke's here?
Oh, Clary. He's not here, Clary said. He left this morning, and I don't know where he went, but I can certainly see now why he had to go. She could hardly bear to look at Jace.
Fine, you win. We should never have come. I should never have made that portal.
Made a portal? Isabel looked bewildered.
Clary, only a warlock can make a portal. And there aren't very many of them. The only portal in Idris is in the guard.
Which is what I had to talk to you about, Alec hissed at Jace, who looked, Clary saw with surprise, even worse than he had before. He looked as if he were about to pass out.
About the errand I went on last night? The thing I had to deliver to the guard?
Alec, stop.
Stop, Jace said.
And the harsh desperation in his voice cut the other boy off. Alec shut his mouth and stood staring at Jace, his lip caught between his teeth. But Jace didn't seem to see him.
He was looking at Clary, and his eyes were hard as glass. Finally, he spoke.
"You're right," he said in a choked voice, as if he had to force out the words. "You should never have come. I know I told you it's because it isn't safe for you here, but that wasn't true. The truth is that I don't want you here, because you're rash and thoughtless, and you'll mess everything up. It's just how you are. You're not careful, Clary."
"Mess everything up?"
Clary couldn't get enough air into her lungs for anything but a whisper.
"Oh, Jace," Isabel said sadly, as if he were the one who was hurt.
He didn't look at her. His gaze was fixed on Clary. "You always just race ahead without thinking," he said. "You know that, Clary? We'd never have ended up in the Dumour if it wasn't for you."
"And Simon would be dead. Doesn't that count for anything? Maybe it was rash, but..."
His voice rose. "Maybe?
But it's not like every decision I've made was a bad one. You said after what I did on the boat, you said I'd saved everyone's life."
All the remaining color in Jace's face went. He said with a sudden and astounding viciousness, "Shut up, Clary. Shut up." "On the boat?"
Alex's gaze danced between them, bewildered.
"What about what happened on the boat, Jace?" "I just told you that to keep you from whining," Jace shouted, ignoring Alex, ignoring everything but Clary. She could feel the force of his sudden anger like a wave threatening to knock her off her feet. "You're a disaster for us, Clary. You're a mundane. You'll always be one. You'll never be a shadow hunter. You don't know how to think like we do, think about what's best for everyone. All you ever think about is yourself. But there's a war on now, or there will be, and I don't have the time or the inclination to follow around after you, trying to make sure you don't get one of us killed."
She just stared at him. She couldn't think of a thing to say. He'd never spoken to her like this. She'd never even imagined him speaking to her like this. However angry she'd managed to make him in the past, he'd never spoken to her as if he hated her before.
"Go home, Clary," he said.
He sounded very tired, as if the effort of telling her how he really felt had drained him.
"Go home."
All her plans evaporated. Her half-formed hopes of rushing after Fel, saving her mother, even finding Luke. Nothing mattered. No words came. She crossed to the door. Alec and Isabel moved to let her pass. Neither of them would look at her. They looked away instead, their expressions shocked and embarrassed. Clary knew she probably ought to feel humiliated as well as angry, but she didn't. She just felt dead inside. She turned at the door and looked back. Jace was staring after her. The light that streamed through the window behind him left his face in shadow. All she could see was the bright bits of sunshine that dusted his fair hair like shards of broken glass. "When you told me the first time that Valentine was your father, I didn't believe it," she said. "Not just because I didn't want it to be true, but because you weren't anything like him. I've never thought you were anything like him. But you are. You are." She went out of the room, shutting the door behind her.
"They're going to starve me," Simon said.
He was lying on the floor of his cell, the stone cold under his back. From this angle, though, he could see the sky through the window. In the days after Simon had first become a vampire, when he had thought he would never see daylight again, he'd found himself thinking incessantly about the sun and the sky, about the ways the color of the sky changed during the day, about the pale sky of morning, the hot blue of midday, and the cobalt darkness of twilight. He'd lain awake in the darkness with a parade of blues marching through his brain. Now, flat on his back in the cell under the guard, he wondered if he'd had daylight and all its blues restored to him just so that he could spend the short, unpleasant rest of his life in this tiny space with only a patch of sky visible through the single barred window in the wall.
"Did you hear what I said?" He raised his voice. "The Inquisitor's going to starve me to death. No more blood."
There was a rustling noise, an audible sigh. Then Samuel spoke.
"I heard you. I just don't know what you want me to do about it." He paused. "I'm sorry for you, Daylighter, if that helps."
"It doesn't really," Simon said. "The Inquisitor wants me to lie. Wants me to tell him that the Lightwoods are in league with Valentine. Then he'll send me home."
He rolled over onto his stomach, the stones jabbing into his skin.
"Never mind. I don't know why I'm telling you all this.
You probably have no idea what I'm talking about.
Samuel made a noise halfway between a chuckle and a cough.
Actually,